Okay, we're going to continue talking with Stephanie Arnold, and we're going to take your phone calls as well. 37 seconds, dying revealed heaven's help. We'll get into that too when we come right back. Welcome back to Coast, Stephanie Arnold with us. Stephanie, after you flatlined and came back, did you notice if anything had happened to you in terms of having any kind of clairvoyancy or any kind of mystical powers?
Yes. The way that I explain it is I've had intuitive thoughts when I was younger, but half of the time I was wrong. So I just chalked it, you chalk it up to coincidence.
Sure.
And when you're right, you get a little
lucky guess or something like that.
Right, exactly. So I didn't take it that seriously. And when I was right, you kind of hide from it because you don't want to be labeled a freak. So I just kind of compartmentalized it. So I said that I was on low voltage when I was younger. And then this happens. And then I lose all electricity in my body when I die. And now I'm on high voltage. I see things that I did not see before, but they are there. And they've always been there. And, one of the things that I see, and I see in complete strangers, I tell a story of a couple that I had met at the start of the school year last year, this couple that are not from this country, and I don't know them well, and they came over to the house for dinner, and the kids were playing, and my husband was in the office. He's usually away when these things happen. So, I'm chopping up tomatoes, and maybe these things don't happen on purpose around him because of his energy, but he's learning to adapt.
Yeah.
So I'm chopping up tomatoes, and all of a sudden I get a hot flash. And when I get a hot flash, it's because a spirit is present. And I don't know what's going to happen when I ultimately get hot flashes, but for right now, that's my tell. So I get a hot flash, and there is a man standing next to the father of a friend of my daughter's. And it's nobody that I know, but it looks an awfully lot like him. And I say to this man, I say, I'm sorry, I don't mean to intrude on your privacy. And I'm thinking to myself, either I'm going to say something and they're going to think I'm a freak, and they're going to totally tell everybody at school, keep away from her because she's crazy, or they're going to embrace it. And if I've learned anything, I now say everything that comes up because there's a reason, there's a meaning, there's a message,
sure.
There's something happening, and there's a reason this person is there. And I said to him, I said, did you lose your father? And he said, and mind you, I know nothing about them. He's like, yes, I did when I was very young. I said, okay, so he's here. And then I go into a barrage of things. I said, so he wants me to tell you that he's always here. He's always around you. He's always around the kids. He just is amazed at what an incredible father you are. And I said, and by the way, he also wants me to tell you that he's around your mother and that he functions like a guardian angel to her. And he smiled and he said, that's nice. He says, but I doubt that's true. Because they hated each other, and she has always hated him, and he always hated her, and up until the moment that he died, she poisoned him against me, or me against him, and my biggest regret is when he died when I was 7, that I didn't get to know him, and you could see his shoulders lifting, and he was feeling better, and he had tears in his eyes because he was finally feeling a connection to his father. And, I said, look, this is what I'm seeing. There's no words. There's no audio to it. Maybe I'm, because of my television medium, like this is what I'm, these are the way the messages are given, but they're like little film strips and they're just blurts and it's left to interpretation, just like the coin situation. And I said, okay, so I must be wrong. I said, maybe I'm misreading what it is, but that's what it is. But that's what I thought I was. And so then he was very gracious. They were very gracious. And his wife called me the next day and says, are you sitting down? And I said, yes. She says, first of all, I need to thank you because this is the first time I've seen him in a long time. Just very happy, like not a care in the world and just feeling connected. And said, but I called his mother and I told her the story. And mind you, she's never said a nice thing about the father ever. And I've known him forever, a very long time. And she said, and when I told her what you said about her, she said, well, it's actually true. And she said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, you know, when I'm in dire straits or I'm in a, you know, a bit of a funk or something like that, a song from 1950s from Vienna will play on the radio. And I know it's him watching over me, and I get great comfort knowing that he's my guardian angel.
Yeah, that is something else. Are you not afraid of dying anymore?
No, I'm not. I was never afraid of dying. I just wasn't ready to.
Well, no, that's an important point too, because you're young, you've got children. Who wants to check out early when you have that?
Right, right. There are plenty of people that I've spoken to that have said, "Oh my gosh, it was so warm and nice and inviting and everything," and it was all of that. But I wasn't ready to go. I was fighting like heck to stay here and be with my love of my life and to be with my children. And this was not, I was not going down without a fight. And the way that I talk about it in the book is in that moment, and I won't go into too much detail because I may as well read the whole book to you. But, you know, in that moment, there were things that were being said to me and what I was watching happening. And I fought a lot.
I don't blame you. Let's take some calls here for you, Stephanie. Questions and or stories about the other side. Craig is in Bermuda. We'll get going here. Hi, Craig. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, long time listener.
Thank you, sir.
I had an abdominal aneurysm in 2010.
Oh, no.
And six times over, they ended up bringing me back. I had a out-of-body experience real briefly from what I could remember. I just saw the team, you know, operating on me and everything, and that was pretty much it.
Well, I'm glad you came out of it.
Yeah.
And you're back similar to you, Stephanie. Stephanie, when this happened to you and you flatlined, the anesthesiologist that you were telling, this is going to happen to me, what did she say to you?
So she didn't say anything in the consultation. She just felt bad that she wasn't helping me. So, but the day that I checked into the labor and delivery, she happened to be on call and she saw my flag pop up. So she was actually in the operating assisting the attending. And she said before I got wheeled into the operating room to the other doctor, and I learned this later, she said, "I've got a bad feeling about this."
Well,
so she was,
she felt
she felt it, but she would tell me later that she's a very spiritual person, and she thanks God every time she meets a new patient because they've come into her path for a reason. So she's like, look, it's nothing that I learned at Northwestern. It's nothing that I learned in medical school. She says, I am very appreciative and aware of energy. And so she sees things with what other people would call an instinct. I call spiritual.
What message have you picked up from the 37 seconds of being flatlined?
Sure. Many messages. The first is, if you sense something, say something, right? From a patient advocate point of view and from a human being point of view, that you know something's wrong, whether you believe the message is coming from beyond or whether you think it's coming from inside of you. You know something's there, and don't listen to anybody else. Use my story as an extreme story, getting people left and right telling me no, and then ultimately I was right. So you know what's best. And in the 37 seconds, the message that I realized is we are 100% not alone. There is no way, and I have tried. I have tried to disprove it. I've tried to say, okay, maybe I was hallucinating. Maybe this is just the brain shutting down, and these are just wishful thinking. But there's no way that I could know the majority of the things that I know that were validated by the doctors or separate people or strangers that I don't even know that have never met me before. And that I know intimate details of loved ones that have just popped in my head. It's not that I can't make any of that up. And I'm not saying this happens every day, but I do 100% believe that we are not alone. And that is a definite message I take away from this.
We go to Virginia now in California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Virginia. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a story and a question, if I can.
Oh, of course. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to go with the story. Well, I had a brother that passed on in 95, and it was in the month of September, and then, you know, it was during moving towards the holidays and stuff, and we had to keep moving forward, so I had taken my girls out and my niece out to shop for that, for what they were going to get for that Christmas. And we shopped around downstairs at the mall, and we couldn't find what we're looking for, so we went upstairs. And when we went upstairs, we went into the bedding department, and we found what we're looking for, and we went up, and we were paying for it. And the manager of the store had, you know, went up to us to help us with our order, and he looked up at us, and he told me that he didn't want to startle us, but that he had seen that somebody was following us, and we got kind of startled, like, thinking somebody was, like, following us, you know, like, stalking. And he said, no. He said he's not of this world, and it only happened 3 times to him, and he had, my brother had came through, and he basically was, like, interpreting what my brother was saying. So, you know, for the other side, that was confirmation for me, because he knew nothing of my brother and described him perfectly. Yeah, so, you know, for that place. And, you know, is there any messages coming through for me?
Are you asking me about messages? So I make it very clear that I don't consider myself a medium. They happen organically in a situation where if things are quiet and I'm paying attention to the vibe of a person, it happens in person. It is not something that I go out and say, okay, this is what's happening with this family member or what have you. I can sense it usually when somebody is in front of me, because I feel it and I feel what they're giving off and I feel their energy. But and that's how I see things, and that's how I feel them when they're in front of me.
How did they finally revive you? How did they get you back?
So they, you know, they did the paddles. They intubated me. They got the heart started again and stabilized, and that happened relatively quickly.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in pain when you revived, or were you just out of it?
Completely out of it. I had started dialysis by that time, so when they finally extubated me, when they finally took the tube out of my throat, I was coming to. They brought the medication down. I looked down and I was swollen because I was full of edema, and I looked at my husband, and I won't curse on air, but I said, am I still freaking pregnant? Because I was so hyped up and angry that nobody was listening, so I just picked up where I left off, and my husband said, no, sweetheart, you gave birth 6 days ago, and that just blew my mind. And because I was on such heavy drugs and so out of it, I had no way of feeling anything. I was just numb.
What shocked you, Stephanie, about the regression therapy that you had in going back?
I was shocked that I could actually be hypnotized. That was the first thing. As a type A personality and very much grounded, and a reality TV producer, I'm like, oh, okay, this could be a good shtick, right? You know, so it's a good job if you can get it. So I go into it very skeptical, but, you know, some people have had very positive results. So because I was just so, I didn't care, I was at a point where I was just, let's just find answers, nothing else was working, that I was very laid back going into it. So she kind of circumvented the direct approach of getting me under, and I got hypnotized very quickly. And because I videotaped it, looking back at how my body remembered the trauma, because my body actually reacted to the moments of when I went into the seizure and gagging. You actually see on the video me arching and, you know, me gagging and flopping around and my body just collapsing. You know, that shocked me. And my husband cannot watch the tape, and my doctors are completely traumatized by the tapes. They can't believe it.
Let's go to Jackie now in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a spiritual experience, and I died and was brought back and was in a coma for several days when they told my family that I would not live, but I did. But mine was very, very different than Stephanie's. I had attempted suicide and ended up in a very dark and black place that you could actually feel the black and the evil, and I will call it evil. And I was terrified, and I cried out to God and said, I'm sorry. Please take me from this place. And I'm sorry, and please save me. And I was immediately engulfed in this immense white light with a being. And he counseled me, and he let me choose to live or die. And he showed me my husband, and my husband was in the hospital chapel, and he was praying to God and asking God to please save me. And he was telling him what he would do if he would just please let me live. And after I came out of the coma, they put me in a psychiatric facility to help me understand that I had gone into a very deep depression, postpartum depression, where I really believed that I was going to do better if I died, and that my children would be better off with a better mother. And, you know, and that's how deep the depression was, that it had caused a chemical imbalance in my brain. But I didn't tell my husband what happened, because while I was in that psychiatric unit, I thought, if I tell him that I was with this angel and his name was Michael, and when he first told me he was an angel, he said he was an archangel. And I said, well, is an archangel a good angel or a bad angel? Because I was raised Mormon, and they don't teach you about angels and archangels and things. And he says, and that was when he engulfed me in this intense feeling of love that was so powerful that I knew it was from God. There was no doubt in my mind. And he literally filled my spirit and my body.
Now, that's an interesting thing to ask you too, Stephanie. I haven't gotten into your spirituality, but did that change at all, or was it magnified? Yeah. What happened?
So I have a strong belief in God, and I have a strong faith in God. We were raised Jewish. I start the book by talking about a couple of different experiences that I had gone to see the chief rabbi, or the Rebbe. I was producing Jewish educational documentaries, and the Rebbe gives a dollar for good luck, and he gave me a dollar, and he said, you'll have children. And I think I was 22 at the time.
Yeah.
You'll have children, but it will be a difficult process. And, you know, I didn't know what that meant. I was 22 years old. I don't care about that. And so, you know, that was it. So I didn't really think too much about it. I have the Sabbath. We, you know, we light candles. We have all of that. But my spirituality has been growing for years. Even though I identify as being Jewish, I always knew there was something else out there. I would see Taoist priests doing things. I went to China for a week and meditated on a mountaintop with a bunch of Taoist priests, and understanding that there's energy that they carry, like a Mr. Miyagi kind of thing, where they shake their hands and
wipe, you know, on, wipe off, right?
Totally, completely. But I saw a woman get hurt and swollen ankle, and I saw this man do a Mr. Miyagi, hands together, rub them together, and then put them on the ankle, and she could walk, you know, a minute later. And I was like, I want to learn that. What is that? What is that about? And that is not religion. That is something that's coming from an internal spiritual love, and what you can do and heal with that. So I do have faith in God. I believe in God. I am not cynical in that way at all, but I am incredibly, very, very much more spiritual than I was many years ago.
Okay, we're going to come back, Steph, and take some final calls with you. Fast Night, right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your final calls, 37 seconds. I should ask you now, Stephanie, where can people get your book? And your website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, but it's stephaniearnold.net. But the book is available where?
The book is available everywhere. On the homepage of the website, you can see Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indie Books, iBookstore. You can walk into your bookstore and get it. It's on Kindle. It's everywhere.
Are they reading it in heaven?
You know, it's funny you should
say that because my cousin who wrote the book with me, who's on the title, she's a journalist and she's my first cousin. And she went to see a psychic, I guess, many, many months ago after we had finished the book. And she walked in and she'd never met the psychic before. And she said, the spirits are smiling. And she said, and my cousin Sarah is like, what do you mean? And she says, there's something you're doing. The spirits are smiling because you're making people aware. And she says, I don't know what that means. And Sarah said, I do.
I love it.
So, yes, I don't think they need to read it, you know, but yes.
How are you how are the two children now?
Oh my gosh, they're so amazing. So I have a stepdaughter who's 10, Adina's 4, and Jacob is now 2. And they're so beautiful and happy and a pain in the butt and annoying.
Typical
and
kids.
Everything else. Oh yeah, but it's so nice. You know, at some point I stopped crying. I had the PTSD started to wear down,
sure.
And all the scarring I was concerned with. And, you know, I looked at my husband and I said, you know, I just want to, you know, all this remove, like all the scars are very traumatic. And the doctor's like, but after everything you've been through, you should be glad you're alive. I said, you know what? I'm also very glad that I'm becoming vain again, because that kind of makes me seem like I'm getting back to normal.
Yep.
Not that, you know, it's good, but I just feel like things are getting back to normal.
Do you have a special bond with the little one?
Oh my gosh. You know, the hardest part in the book that I wrote, and I cry every time I think about writing it, every time it's brought up in my head, is I wrote about how much I was scared of him. I didn't bond. I didn't talk about him. I was the body that I was holding him, but I didn't buy anything for him. I didn't take care of the room. I didn't buy any clothes. I didn't take any pictures when I was pregnant with him. And I was scared. And it took me a few weeks to bond. But once I came out of it and once I realized, hey, there's a baby in the story that needs me more than I need to worry about my health. I need to get back to being his mom. Once that clicked, this little soul is just this pure bliss, and I love him more than anything on the planet. He's my little man.
That's great. Okay, let's go back to final calls now. Melissa in South Carolina, welcome to the program. Hi, Melissa.
Hello. I have to honor Stephanie big time because she was dealing with something on her own, and she did research. She did everything that most people don't do. And I'm coming from a scientific experience standpoint, not the ethereal standpoint, but I love that part too, because I had a second child, and the second night I was in the hospital, I had this weight. It started at about noon that day, this weight on my chest that was just pressing down and pressing down. I had visitors all day. The man I was married to was a medical student in the same university hospital system. He came in and said, I'm going to stay out of my parents with our other son. And he said, okay, if I don't come back in. And I said, yes. And I knew I was going to die. And so Stephanie probably gets this. Anybody who's throwing an embolism has this awareness. There's something that you just say, you accept it, and it's peaceful. It's not what you want. It's not what you would choose, but there's this peace that comes over you. And so I said, yeah, that's fine. I didn't tell him that I had this crushing weight bearing on my chest. And so the next day, and so what happened was the nurses who were taking my blood pressure called the doctor in. They hooked a cuff up to me for hours, and the doctor sat by my bedside while I was going through this. And the next day when my husband picked me and our new baby up and we had our other child in the vehicle, I said, you know, I didn't tell you, but when you came in at about 5 o'clock, I knew I was going to die. I said, it was okay. You know, I was totally fine with it. He said, because he was a medical person, he said, oh, you were throwing an embolus. You had an impending sense of doom. And this is a term that is used in medical texts Stephanie, you probably came across that.
Yeah.
Impending sense of doom. And I said, oh, no, it wasn't negative. Because when he said that to me, I said, no, it wasn't negative. And he said, no, that's a medical term.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, and Tommy knows, and other people, David Bloom, precious journalist who was over in Iraq, covering, he was embedded with the troops when they were coming into Iraq, and he called his wife, and he was dead 3 hours later.
Yeah.
And so when I heard that story, I thought he had that impending sense of doom, and he was okay with it. You know, we were glad to be alive, but we understand something about when you die, that's, it's just part of life, and you know everything's going to be okay. You know, it's a weird thing to describe, but I knew, even though I had a new baby and a toddler, I knew they would be fine without me. There was something that took over that gave me a sense of peace.
That's the way to do it. Hey, thanks for sharing that story with us, Melissa. What words of wisdom, Stephanie, would you impart on people because of what happened to you?
I would say that first and foremost is that if you sense something, say something. You, like I said before, you know it better than anyone else, no matter how crazy anybody thinks you are. You keep at it. And in a medical situation, you keep saying it until the doctors are fed up with you, and then you get another doctor until somebody ultimately hears you. And I will tell you that my doctors practice medicine a little differently since then.
Yeah.
And I want people to understand that the fear of death is valid. You can validate people by saying, yes, I understand you don't want to go. That moment that you die is incredibly peaceful unless you're not ready to go and it's not your time. But the overall feeling that other people are there waiting for you on the other side is absolutely correct.
Is there anything that scared you about the other side?
No, there is nothing that scared me from the other side. There were when I had that moment and I wrote in the book about what that moment looked like. There is nothing that scared me other than the fact that I couldn't physically be with my husband anymore. That was the only thing that scared me.
Sad.
Sad, but, sure.
But
yes,
you pulled out of it.
No question. It's, you know, one of my doctors who's, you know, a board member at the hospital and a professor and teacher, she said, I can't give you a medical reason why you survived. I think you're going to need to go spiritual on this one. And I have.
Let's take some final calls. We've got Terry now in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. Terry, there?
Somebody said Elvis or something.
I don't know if she's there. You check it out, Tom. See if Terry's available. I think Terry may have fallen asleep waiting on hold for so long. Let's go to Coronado, California, west of the Rockies. Ann, you're with us. Go ahead, Annie.
Yes, hello. My name is Ann.
Go ahead.
And yes, I did have an experience. And I'll tell you the story, but then I have two questions I want to ask Stephanie.
Sure thing.
When I finish, okay?
Okay.
I was feeling badly, poorly, and I went to my doctor, and she said, well, you're all right. She gave me some pills, and I said, well, I just feel horrible. And then about 2 weeks later, after I'd really felt horrible, I'd been down these pills for a while, but she just gave me more of them, and I had a doctor appointment. She said, well, come on in, you know, and I did. And I couldn't hardly walk. I was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. So she told me to get up on the examination table, and I couldn't do it. And she says, okay. She says, I'll tell you what, you're going to the hospital. And I said, well, when? She says, right now. I says, right now? She must have tested my pulse or something. Anyway, she said, so I had a friend there with me, and she drove me directly to the hospital, and I could not remember going through the doors of the big doors to the hospital. Oh, they met me I was put in a wheelchair, and they were going to put me through these floors and take me up to where I had to go. And I don't remember anything until maybe, I don't know how many hours later, 10, maybe 12 hours later, I'm waking up, and I'm in my room, and my daughter's there, and I've got tubes and everything all over me. And I said, what is all that noise going on in the other room? She says, all those people running around like crazy. She says, Mother, they were trying to save your life.
Wow.
Well, I didn't even know that I had died. And they asked me, and a lot of people asked me, well, did you see the light? Did you see the light? I said, she said, well, what did you see? And I said, as I remember, I said, I came right out of my mouth. I said, it was so boring.
Boring.
Boring. Boring. What's going on? That was what. But that was my experience. Except for, I was in the hospital for 7 months recuperating. Now that's the question I want to ask Stephanie. Was she hospitalized for any length of time? Because I couldn't.
When
I woke up, I couldn't move my toes. I could just. But the first 3 weeks, it was moving my toes, and I had tubes and everything over.
I was in the hospital for about a month. So I was in ICU.
That's a long time.
It was, and look, you want to get out of a hospital as quickly as possible, right? So about a week in ICU, then 2.5 weeks in the maternity ward, inpatient dialysis, then they finally discharged me, and then 24 hours later, I had a hospital-acquired infection, and I was put right back into the hospital.
I bet you don't miss hospitals, Stephanie, do you?
No, but you know what I will tell you, and one of my takeaways and one of the things that I learned was, you know, doing the regression therapy, I was able to release a lot of the stress because you get to a point in time, which many people do when you go through some sort of trauma, you don't want to go back to the scene of the crime, right? So I had a hard time walking by Northwestern or going there, and even though they saved my life, I was like, I don't need to walk through those doors right now. And once I started the therapy and once I started feeling better, I was able to go back in relatively quickly and just thank every single doctor and nurse and different departments for helping to save my life.
What is the big message that you've personally learned about all this?
Yes. So I've asked myself often, why did I have to go through this? What was the lesson that I needed to go through in order to get to this point? And, you know, working in TV, you understand you're producing things, you're showing it in front of millions of people, and like, okay, why was I chosen to go through this? And I would say my own personal lessons were, I have become much more empathetic in this fast-paced world, social media, TV, just every access to everywhere and constantly going, that I take the time to breathe in, and moments mean something different to me. So even this conversation with you, whether I ever speak to you again or whether we speak weekly, you are affecting my life in these 2 hours, and I am present. I am not anywhere else but in this moment, and I am trying to do that with every single encounter, every single day of my life.
Good for you.
Because it's richer that way. And I have much more empathy towards people who are of all walks of life with zero judgment, because I, you know, whether it was being obese with fluid or whether it was, you know, having a heart attack at a young age or anything, just being unhealthy, I just appreciate health. And man, do I love deeply. I love my husband better than I've ever loved him before.
And you loved him a lot then.
And I loved them a lot now. But I really understand what love and that can't breathe without you love feels like.
I understand your grandmother was a witch.
You know, my grandmother's Cuban, and she, I call her a witch in a good way, call her a bruja, but she is, you know, and sometimes she could be bitchy, so maybe she was witchy in another way, but she absolutely saw things differently. And my father, who was a judge and a lawyer, would say, my mother, you know, believes in ESP and santeros and like all these things. And, you know, I think that is passed down generation to generation, where you can see things as a gift
I just believe that everybody, and this was another takeaway, I believe everybody has the power to do this. Everybody.
There's
you just
no
need
doubt.
To take the time to quiet down and listen.
Let's go to Walter in New York, Troy, New York. Hey, Walter.
Oh, how you doing, George?
Good, Walter.
I had an experience 33 years ago. I was in the Navy, served on a submarine. We were cruising, going somewhere, which I can't tell. And we were cruising. We hit a low salinity patch of water. We dropped like an elevator down. Alarms are sounding. The crew responded, thank goodness. And we were able to save the ship and save our lives.
Jeez.
During that whole time, and I talked to everybody on the boat afterwards, and we're talking, and we all sensed a light. Don't know what it was, but I believe now. And the funny thing was, 4 months later, when we get home, my wife says, what happened on this date? And it was the date that we nearly went down with all hands.
Jeez. What a catastrophe that would have been.
Wow.
Of biblical proportions.
Wow.
Have you remained, Stephanie, spiritual?
Yes, and it is beyond anything else because I do not believe in coincidence any longer.
Nor do I. I never did.
Okay, so I'll give you a very quick example.
We have 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, we have 40. Okay, well, I don't know if that's that quick. But anyway.
Hey, you're a TV producer. You know what the seconds mean.
I'll wind it down. I was on a trip recently, a very random trip, and there were only 15 people on the trip, and it happened to be that Nicholas Sparks was there at the same time. And so he wrote The Notebook and other stories, and we were talking, got to know each other. Fantastic. Fast forward 2 weeks later, I'm talking to the head of the AFE Foundation. The AFE Foundation supports AFE, survivors, what have you.
Yeah.
And she says, Nicholas Sparks wrote a book where the character dies of an AFE. And I said, what are you talking about? And I call him back and he says, look, Stephanie, he said, I didn't talk about it because your reality is much more interesting than my fiction. And I said, don't you find that odd that you wrote a book 10 years ago and now I meet you here and then you wrote a book out of all 20 of your bestsellers and dies of a very rare condition? And he said, well, now that you say it, yeah, that might be a little weird.
It's called Synchronicity, and this book is called 37 Seconds. Stephanie, thanks. I'm glad everything really worked out for you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.